From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The bar was very high for white students. She tested very well, just not quite high enough to meet Peyton standards. Our investigation revealed that there was a phone call made to the CEO's office by Mr. Rauner.
A lower assumed rate of return, in essence, is a lowering of the estimated amount of revenue that we will collect from our investments over a longer period of time. If the 7.5% rate had been in effect this past year, that contribution from the state would have increased by about $500 million.
The Board of Higher Ed inserted a clause in his separation agreement saying he would be available to consult with the board on matters during this three-month transition period. We found an email that said that clause was inserted so that there would not be issues in the press for him being paid for work he didn't do. But we couldn't find any record that they ever actually tried to consult with him, that they asked him any questions, that he did any kind of consulting, and he didn't cooperate with our office.
New questions arise about just what strings Bruce Rauner may have pulled to get his daughter into a prestigious Chicago high school. The state's biggest pension fund lowers its investment projections, and a new report reveals the Board of Higher Education fibbed about why its former director left. That's coming up on State Week in Review this week. You heard about those topics from, at the end there, David Morrison. He's with the Office of the Executive Inspector General, which published that report on the Board of Higher Ed. Before him, teachers' retirement spokesman Dave Urbanek, and also then the Chicago Public Schools outgoing Inspector General James Sullivan. He was from an interview on WTTW, Chicago Public Television, talking about how Rauner's daughter got into Walter Payton Prep. I'm Amanda Vinicky, filling in on State Week this week for Bill Wheelhouse, and joining me are panelists Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Doug Finke, the State House reporter for Gatehouse Media that has the State Journal Register in Springfield, as well as papers in Peoria, Rockford, and Galesburg. And Andy Maloney, the Springfield Bureau Chief for the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. Thanks so much, everyone. Let's get started there with Republican candidate for governor Bruce Rauner. And this is something that has dogged him in the primary. We heard a lot from Rauner about how he is anti-clout, anti-politicians using the strings that they have available to them to try and get, you know, any sort of favors done, what have you. And he says, hey, I'm not going to do that. But lo and behold, a lot of questions about just how his daughter was able to, instead of going to the New Trier Public High School in Winnetka, one of the best high schools in this state, mind you, instead, his daughter was accepted into a very prestigious school in Chicago, Walter Payton Prep. And we heard back and forth a lot, Doug, right, during the primary about just how that happened. Can you review what Rauner has said and how he's maybe switched up his story?
Well, he's had some contradictory statements about how she got in and who or who he did not talk to. He initially said he did not talk to Arne Duncan, head of the schools, I believe, and that turned out not to be correct. He initially said that his daughter had the grades to get into Walter Payton Prep, and that turned out not to be correct. More and more, it's appearing that he did, in fact, pull the strings necessary to get his daughter in that where she might not otherwise have qualified to get into the school.
Well, because what we heard there from James Sullivan was the first time that it was publicly stated that, first of all, that he had really, you know, made this call, and whereas Rauner said he used the system available to everybody else to get his daughter in, that no, that she worked around that system. And that's what we have now on the record confirmed from Sullivan. Andy, how big of a deal is this? I mean, these questions were out there. We didn't have this from CPS, from an inspector there, but people knew, voters knew about this in the primary.
Yeah, sure. I think you sort of nailed it in the opening there, Amanda, because Rauner is a guy who has sort of made his living so far in this campaign on, besides, you know, having the funds necessary, but also being an outsider, not wielding sort of the levers of political power within the system, and sort of denouncing, in several examples, political insiders in different scenarios. You have the lawsuits and the amendment for legislative term limits that he wants to sort of get across and champion, and he denounces insiders in that context. But now I think Democrats have a very specific example of maybe where he himself was kind of playing this role with regards to his daughter and Peyton Pratt.
Bruce Rauner might have been better off just fessing up right from the beginning and saying, yeah, I use whatever influence I could. I love my children more than anything in the world. I would do anything for them. And yeah, I have some influence, and I used it to get her in the school where she wanted to go and where I thought she would do best. And if there are any parents out there who wouldn't do that for their own child, I would suggest that they're not very darn good parents. And that would have laid the issue to rest. And it reminds me, years ago, the first Mayor Daley, somebody complained about him steering some city business to one of his kids, and he said, I'm their father, and what kind of a dad would I be if I couldn't do that? And if you don't like it, you can kiss my whatever. And Paul Powell, when he was called about racetrack stock, he said, yeah, I got some, and I wish I had more because it makes me a lot of money. It's always the cover-up and the changing stories that keep these kind of things alive. Had he just said, yeah, I did it, any dad would do it, that would have been the end of it. And instead,
well,
and it's been dragging
it's
on and dragging mm-hmm. on. Yeah.
And that is one of the comments that you often hear. Hey, he's not a bad dad. I'm not sure. There still would have been questions, I think, particularly because critics would say taking up a spot that somebody really needed, a poor kid, when his daughter could have gone to New Trier, again, one of the best high schools in Illinois. But nonetheless, Charlie, I think you're right. And yet it's also a question of, can you trust the guy?
Well, yeah,
he's a first-term candidate, and the story's just been all over, flip-flopping every which way.
Yeah, and I think in the long run, that's probably more damaging. True, his clouting his daughter in deprives someone else of the spot. I think that's less, what would you say, less of a sin.
It's hard to turn into a campaign commercial, maybe. Maybe
yeah,
not.
As,
I don't
as
know.
Much as
I could
this
see,
guy's
get
had
more,
three different stories, and he keeps changing his story. And why doesn't he tell us the truth? And if he's not going to tell us the truth about this, how can we trust him on anything else?
Well, let's move on, and we won't make this the Rauner hour completely, but there was a bit more news from that camp. And in terms of how much can you trust him, I think a lot of high expectations for Bruce Rauner that he set up for himself when he talks about how he wants to change Springfield, flip it on its face, that he has these big plans for, you know, he's got that hammer in the commercial and shake up Springfield. And we had seen recently, finally, he had unveiled what he said was a budget plan. I'm in the camp that refuses to call it a plan. But nonetheless, we've got another phase of that now. And this is somewhere where, again, I think high expectations, because, of course, Bruce Rauner, a very successful businessman. That's how he's had the money to be able to put so much into his campaign. And he says it's a way to get his corporate welfare reform is actually what it was termed. And this is a plan that seeks to change one of the state's most popular, well-known programs for giving companies tax credits, incentives, whatever you want to term them, for staying in Illinois or creating jobs. That's the EDGE program. And then also rolling back some additional tax, again, credits, breaks, incentives for things like, I mean, this is coming again, Bruce Rauner is saying that he wants no more tax incentives for example, a yacht or a jet if somebody passes it down to their family members, amongst other things. So let's go there. Anybody surprised in the tone of this corporate welfare plan coming from Rauner, a friend of business?
Not necessarily, because a lot of this stuff is more or less populist. The whole idea of the jets and the yacht thing, Joe Sixpack out there, of course, can't relate to people who have their own jets and yachts, so that plays well with them. The fact of the matter is a whole lot of these things that are on his list have been discussed for years around the Capitol, and the reason we're still discussing them is because they never get enacted. Quinn has tried. There was one of these proposals was about taxing oil production on the continental shelf, and Quinn has raised that before. In fact, Quinn's response to this whole list was they stole all his ideas. Well, whether they did or didn't, his ideas haven't gone anywhere, and these things haven't gone anywhere in the past. So, yeah, I guess you have a kind of a novelty of a Republican proposing ending some of the so-called corporate welfare, but I'm not sure his calling for it is going to advance it any more than anyone else.
Or is Rauner onto something there? Because, sure, Quinn may have introduced these things, but there we go. This is Quinn, who is an ineffective leader, could be the charge. Does that hold any sway, Andy?
He's made that charge before, and I do think there is a little bit of an element to that. But I think the reaction to this has still predominantly been, we're still not seeing that kind of detailed, granular plan on how to sort of get the state out of the fiscal mess. I mean, one of the things in the list is, you know, adding on to what Doug has already said, was eliminating a sales tax exemption for newsprint, right? So not sure that that's going to sort of solve the billions and billions of dollars. But, I think that's sort of the main narrative. There is that sort of sub-element of saying, well, Governor Quinn couldn't get this done because he's not an effective leader, and I am. He's not going to be able to prove that unless he wins. So we'll see if that's a good argument for him.
And I think also a lot of people waiting for the innovation that, again, this is supposed to be shakeup, but these are a lot of older ideas. Charlie, let's bring you into the conversation, fiscal expert here. How much will all of these ideas, we didn't get a figure from the Rauner campaign, he only placed a value on some portions of it, talking about the changes to EDGE, maybe we will have time to get more in there, but what will this do for the state budget or anything?
Well, if you look at what he suggested, it's a drop in the bucket, but it goes to the fact that the average person doesn't have time to sit and study this stuff, and so you have a big headline, close special interest loopholes. And you say, oh, loopholes, man, there's all these tax breaks being given out. I wonder how much it's costing us, and I wonder who's getting these special tax breaks. Well, it just so happens that every year the comptroller, currently it's Judy Bartopinka, but her predecessors, Republicans and Democrats, have done the same thing, puts out a report called the Tax Expenditure Report, which is a euphemism for loopholes, if you will. And in fiscal year 2013, which is the most recent one for which we have complete data, the total impact of all tax expenditures was just about $9 billion. And guess what the very largest one of those loopholes was? The fact that Illinois is one of three states that does not tax retirement income or Social Security. That accounted for more than $2 billion of that nine. The next largest one for $1.5 billion is the fact that we don't put sales tax, the state does not, on food, drugs, and medical appliances. After that comes the individual deduction on the income tax, then the property tax credit for individuals.
Popular things with voters.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you want to make an impact, it's just like with his so-called budget plan, you have to look at where the money goes. If you were to propose, for example, taxing retirement income, you could bring in a lot of money. If you're talking about doing away with the EDGE credit, which the comptroller said cost all of $45 million, you're not going to make much of an impact. Same thing on the budget side. If you can say, okay, we're not going to fly prairie chickens anymore and we'll save $7,000, how does that compute with a $6 billion problem? If you want to cut the budget, you have to look at education, health care, human services. You have to look at where the money goes instead of picking out these kind of sexy items that get people riled but don't amount to a hill of beans in the grand scheme of things.
I'd like to take this opportunity. Let's do kind of a rapid fire round here. And I want to know, go around the table, was it together, these two plans now that we have from Bruce Rauner or whatever we want to call them if we don't want to use that four-letter word of plan, a smart tactic in that it is playing to voters and not getting too into the weeds and offending anybody, and that's all he has to do to win, or a stupid one that shows that he hasn't done enough homework and he isn't ready for prime time? Let's go around. Doug?
Well, excuse me, I don't think it's a stupid tactic, simply because, as Charlie pointed out earlier, most people out there are not immersed in this stuff, and they're only going to hear some of the things they want to hear. We're going to close loopholes. That's going to take care of the problem. We're going to cut the budget, you know, that the his previous plan, so they're going to get $500 million in savings by cutting the Department of Central Management Services budget without ever saying how. But for most people, that probably doesn't hit home. So all they're hearing is the part we can solve this problem without keeping the tax increase in place, and I think it plays that way.
So it'll do the trick. Andy?
Yeah, I don't think it's a stupid move necessarily. I mean, we can sit here and kind of say, well, this doesn't really solve anything. This is, as Charlie correctly points out, a drop in the bucket. But yeah, it doesn't pop up on the radar, I think, for a lot of voters. A lot of voters probably know more or will know more about Rauner's term limits proposal. They'll know more sort of general items. I mean, I think the major financial issue that may have reached a lot of voters here in the state is pensions now. People mm-hmm. know about the pension issue, but maybe not some of the more granular budget details that maybe we think of and sort of talk about.
And Charlie, I'll switch this up for you. Would like to know, what do you think? I mean, is it worse that we're not getting a full real initiative with numbers and, you know, Bruce Rauner saying that he could roll back or, you know, not go forward raising the higher level income tax and make do with the budget just through cuts, and then this is what we get from him? Or worse, we're nearing on the end of fiscal year 2014, expecting Governor Pat Quinn, by the time we next tape this program, to have acted, presumably signed into law, the budget for the next fiscal year. So, Charlie, a lot of people saying, though, that the budget the General Assembly put that's going to become the new state budget is a pretty heinous one that just puts off a whole lot of issues until post-election and is kind of, again, living in the clouds, filling up Illinois' bill backlog, et cetera. What's worse?
Well, it occurs to me that the budget that Quinn will sign within the next couple of days kind of holds the place. It's technically balanced in the fact that the amount of money being appropriated for fiscal year 2015 does not exceed the amount of money that the General Assembly concluded would be available. In part because the General Assembly agreed, and when I say General Assembly, the majority Democrats are the ones who did this, agreed to borrow something like $600 million from other earmarked accounts to help provide additional resources for FY 2015. So whoever is elected, it's going to be a real problem. And the danger is, as I see it, sooner or later – The folks who have been too busy with their own lives to follow this are going to have a rude awakening that we're either going to have to cut services upon which a lot of people depend, or we're going to have to raise taxes. Because when the rubber hits the road, all this nonsense about cutting out waste and fraud and abuse and getting rid of prairie chickens and we're going to close these minuscule tax loopholes, it's not going to address the problem. And it's a very real problem. And at some point, it's got to be faced. And you see the surveys that continuously suggest that the average person isn't up to speed, to use that term, on all this stuff. People say, yeah, we want to balance the budget. Oh, we don't want to cut education. We don't want to cut health care. We don't want to cut human services. We don't want to pay any more in taxes. But we still want to balance the budget. I don't think it can be done unless you do talk about additional revenue and making cuts in some of these programs that people genuinely like.
This is State Week in Review. Coming up, subpoenas have been issued for the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative. We'll also talk about pensions, historic preservation, and that IBHE report.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
This is State Week, and on our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Doug Finke, Andy Maloney, and I'm Amanda Vinicky, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse. We've spent a lot of the program talking about Bruce Rauner. Let's move on to something that is dogging Governor Pat Quinn in his bid for re-election. A little something called the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, $55 million program. Questions continue to pop up this week. News, for example, out of the Sun-Times, an article that there was an element of this program supposing to help kids get jobs, run out of a preschool that, oh wait, didn't do anything. Trying to learn more about it, a legislative panel has voted to issue subpoenas to the former director of that program, Barbara Shaw, as well as Governor Pat Quinn's former chief of staff, now lobbyist, Jack Lavin, and also five others. So how damaging is this for Pat Quinn? Are we going to actually get anything when now that these subpoenas have been issued and these individuals showing up sometime mid-July to answer questions to legislators about this NRI and if it was, in fact, some sort of way to basically help Quinn win the 2010 race?
Yeah, all good questions. I don't think this is anything that any of us expect to go away very soon. This looks like with those subpoenas and then the potential for more of them to be issued in the months leading up to the election, this is going to be around for a while. And it's difficult to say exactly what we're going to find out. As you said, seven, I believe, officials. One of another one was Malcolm Weems, the former director of CMS. And some other folks who could give some insight into how that program was run. But again, I mean, this is, like the first time in decades that
panel has used, the last time was 1980,
has used subpoena power. Yeah. So it's been, 30 plus years. So this is clearly something that people are treating as kind of a big deal. And again, the answers that we could get from those folks may not be clear right now, but it's something that is going to, I think, continue to be a thorn in Governor Quinn's side.
And then briefly, Charlie, it did take a Democrats to agree to issue these subpoenas. Are you surprised that Quinn's own party has allowed this to happen? Or they say it's only going to take place over 2 days. Is this Democrats' attempt to try and nip it in the bud as quick as possible?
Well, I think that is true. Democrats want to nip it in the bud. On the other hand, Republicans want to drag it out. The fact of the matter is I don't see anything coming from the Audit Commission hearings for a very simple reason. The people involved in this are already under investigation by the U.S. attorney, some of them by the Cook County State's attorney. And so if you're a lawyer for one of these folks, are you going to have them come in and say anything before a legislative panel that has no criminal justice authority? Or are you going to have them plead the fifth or say we're participating and cooperating with the U.S. attorney? You recall that when Lisa Madigan was looking into illegal hiring under Rod Blagojevich, she got a letter from the U.S. attorney telling her to back off because you're going to mess up my investigation.
And those hold a little bit more sway now, don't they?
Yeah, and so to me, it's – I understand what's going on. The Republicans want to keep hammering Quinn over the head with it. Democrats want it to go away. The audit speaks for itself. It was a horrible. It was probably one of the worst managed programs in state history. It was just disastrous. And as I've said and others have said, anytime you start a program and you decide the best way to figure out who are the worthy recipients is to talk to Chicago aldermen, you're just asking for trouble.
I'll add the audit, but also a lot of good work by the State House Press Corps here, finding out a continued drip of stories. Moving to a report now from the Office of the Executive Inspector General, which looked into the Board of Higher Education that had said that its one-time director, George Reed, had left for personal reasons. He wanted to spend more time with his family, when in fact it seems he was basically pushed out because it had been found he was using a state car like it was a personal one, ending up therefore costing the state a whole lot of money. And also this report from the Inspector General's office seemed to find, they said, no, they didn't find that the Board of Higher Education didn't cooperate. They spoke with some of the board members and its the former head of that board, Carrie Heitman, nonetheless, something that stuck out at me, I guess as a reporter, this is where I'm partial, was that their Board of Higher Education had, as the Inspector General's investigation was ongoing, decided to erase a recording of its closed session meeting when they had decided to hire this Reed fellow. And there were questions about his previous employment history. Doug, can you just say, I don't know, is this how government works, that you need to cover it up because bad headlines lead to bad things, and this is what they had to do in order to get a director out who was doing a bad thing? Or is it really egregious that the state ended up paying, I believe it was $48,000, to get rid of Reed when they need not have?
Well, this is unfortunately the way government works sometimes, and I believe when this guy left, the reason was given personal reasons. We've all over the years have seen public officials leave their jobs for personal reasons. Sometimes they are in fact that, but I think people always wonder when that reason is cited, if that is exactly what's going on, or if there's something nefarious going on. In this case, this guy was hired even though he had exhibited some character traits at his previous job that should have sent up red flags. He was still hired here, and then all these revelations came out about the misuse of a state car and what have you, and the Board of Higher Education decided he had to go, and they approved a contract for him to allegedly do some consulting work, but that was apparently just a cover to make sure the press didn't ask why the guy was getting paid money for not doing anything. It's
which, in fact, it appears he didn't do. Yeah,
it's altogether not a very flattering picture of the board.
Now, we've talked a lot on the State Week about pensions. Now the teacher's retirement system, the largest of Illinois' pension systems, has lowered its projected rate of return. What does that mean about the pension law and potential savings from it? The pension overhaul, of course, on hold while a court case is settled, and there was action along those lines, too. Let's go back to you, Doug.
Well, the pension systems, all the state pension systems, get their money from three sources: the employees themselves, the state contribution, and what they make from investment income. And the bottom line is, if the pension systems believe they're not going to be making as much money as they previously thought from investment income, it's got to be made up somewhere else, and that means the state contribution has to go up. We don't know exactly at this point what the impact is going to be, because they've already set the contribution for the upcoming budget, but nonetheless, it just means more money is going to have to be allocated to keep things on an even keel.
Well, thank you for that, Doug. The court case going to extend, I believe, through at least early December. That's our time for State Week. Thanks so much to our panelists, Charlie Wheeler, and to our guests, the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin's Andy Maloney and Gatehouse Media and State Journal Register's Doug Finke. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. The production assistance for our program today was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.